pretended not to. Evan ran his finger around the rim of his glass, playing for time. Of course she would figure it out, being a mage and a ship's captain. There weren't that many pirates with auras.
"Congratulations, Captain. You've found me out."
Evan swallowed down his ale and signaled the bartender for another.
"I hope that doesn't ruin our nascent friendship."
She raised an eyebrow.
"You don't talk like any pirate I've ever met," she said.
"That's because you've never met a pirate like me," Evan said.
"You're a long way from the ocean, Stormcaster,"
Davilliers said.
"Where's your ship?"
She looked around the room as if he might have hung it on a hook by the door.
"Actually, I seem to be without a ship at the moment," Evan said.
"Ah," she said, shaking her head. "A shipless pirate. There's nothing sadder or more dangerous than that."
"What about you? What's your ship?"
"The Sea Wolf. She sails out of Chalk Cliffs. Have you heard of her?"
Evan nearly choked on his cider, then checked their surroundings to see if she'd brought any crew with her. She had not. It was just the four of them. So he had the numbers.
"I take it you have,"
she said, her eyes crinkling in amusement. The Sea Wolf was the sleek, three-masted flagship of the Felsian Navy. It was the bane of pirates and Ardenine warships alike. Its captain was known as one of the savviest masters afloat. It was just his luck that he'd run into the chief officer of the Felsian Navy in a mountain town. A naval officer who looked like a pirate. One of the few wetlanders who would recognize him. She tilted her chin up.
"Now that we've been introduced, I have a question. I've heard rumors about your Stormborn crew, that they are fierce fighters with reddish auras."
She pointed at Tezza and Brody.
"Here is living proof. What does it mean, and how do they get that way?"
Evan shrugged, downplaying it.
"It simply indicates that they are sworn to me."
"I'm sworn to the Grey Wolf Queen, but I've not grown furry years,"
Davilliers said, running a hand through her hair, as if to verify.
"So these Stormborn, they are not wizards?"
Evan thought of describing them as made mages, but that would naturally spawn questions as to exactly how they were made, which was territory he didn't want to get into. Blood magery was not a topic he wanted to raise on a first meeting.
"Not exactly. I suppose you could say that they are mages with specialized gifts."
Davilliers cocked her head as if still puzzled.
"Such as?"
"They are fierce fighters," Evan said. "Very difficult to kill."
He deflected three more questions before the Felsian captain realized that he'd said all he was going to say on that topic. That didn't mean that she was out of questions.
"So, you're from Karthus," she mused. "Tell me, have you ever heard of a musical instrument called a jafossa?"
Evan could not fathom why this captain would be asking this particular question at this particular time. He nodded.
"They are traditional instruments used by the horse lords of Karthus, because they are light and portable. They are rare these days, because they are so difficult to play."
Davilliers toyed with a small dagger, flipping it and catching it in a way that might cost anyone else a finger.
"Are they magical at all?"
"Only in that they are good for making the time pass more quickly," Evan said.
"You've explained these red mages. Tell me, have you ever seen a mage with an amulet embedded in his skin?"
This time, at least, Evan was somewhat prepared for the verbal cannonball. Still, it was all he could do to maintain his relaxed stance, to resist taking hold of his amulet and fighting his way out of the room. Evan sensed Tezza and Brody shifting their weight, leaning forward, preparing to fight or flee.
He conjured up a puzzled frown. Are you speaking of someone in particular? Someone you have seen or heard of? Was someone asking about Mage Marks recently?
I've heard about it and wondered if it was true,
de Villiers said. As a liar, she had a long way to go. Sticking with bewilderment, he said,
Is it supposed to be something that was done intentionally, or was it the result of a horrible accident?
She laughed.
I just wondered if you'd seen that before, is all.
After a pause, she fortunately changed the subject.
Is my queen expecting you?
Evan considered lying, but decided that might lead to trouble later on.
No, he said.
Why would she want to meet with you? What kind of trade are you proposing?
Maybe it was because Evan knew that she didn't believe his cover story. Maybe it was because she seemed like a kindred spirit. But he found himself telling the truth. Sort of.
Actually, the most important thing I have to offer is information and a possible alliance, Evan said.
An alliance with a notorious pirate without a ship?
De Villiers laughed.
That seems like a good way to end with your throat cut and your purse stolen.
I have ships at home, Evan said, growing testy in spite of himself. We sail both the desert coast and the wetland coast from the southern islands to Invader's Bay. Your navy is small and stretched thin. There's no reason we cannot travel with a full hold both ways.
So you'll sell us goods and then steal from us?
Frankly, the takings are better farther south, Evan said. Everything we steal from Arden helps you. Plus, we can alert you to dangers that you might not anticipate.
Evan stopped with that. De Villiers was giving him a close look over, too. Finally, she seemed to have come to a decision.
I will see the Queen tomorrow, and will let her know about your desire for a meeting.
Thank you, Captain, Evan said. I hope you'll let her know how much
I'll make no promises. This is a bad time to request an audience. I'll send a message to you here at the inn if I'm able to arrange something.
Evan wanted to go on, to tell this Navy captain about the danger bearing down on Chalk Cliffs, especially because she was bent on returning there. But he couldn't risk it. She did, after all, look like a pirate. There was no telling who she really sailed for. After all, Tully Samara sailed for Latham Strangward. Until he didn't. Chapter 18 Back from the Dead. Adrian Sulhan and Lila Byrne took the north road from Arden's Court to the border at Marisa Pines Pass, finally traveling the way they'd planned, back in the fall, before their long and eventful winter in the Ardenine capital. Ash had accomplished his mission. The King of Arden was dead, and an alliance between Arden and the mysterious Empress in the east had been averted. But this small triumph still tasted like ashes in his mouth. Given a choice, would he have traded Jenna's death for King Gerard's? He'd not been offered a choice, and what was done was done. He recalled an argument he'd had with his teacher, Taliesin Bogard, back at Odin's Ford, what seemed like a lifetime ago.
The day will come that you'll wish you were a better healer, the voyager had said. Teach me how to raise the dead, he'd said, and then we'll talk.
He still believed that. Even the most skilled healer can only delay the inevitable. Eventually, they lose. Killers and healers both work the borderlands between life and death. The difference is that, at best, healing is a temporary victory. The dead stay dead. Their chosen road took them through Delphi,
now ruled by a coalition of Delphian patriots. The town was swarming with travelers, so that it wasn't easy to find a place to stay. The snows had been deep and relentless in late winter, and many travelers had stayed longer than they'd planned on, waiting for better weather. The city was in a bit of a hangover from its recent victory celebration, now grappling with the hard work of self-rule. There was still at least a salvo of Highlanders working with the fledgling Delphian army, but no one they knew. So, in the interest of speed and safety, Ash and Lila did not announce themselves. He preferred not to have his return to the queendom heralded by a bird from Delphi. His father had given him a message for his mother when he lay dying on the streets of Ragmarket. Ash felt like he owed it to his mother to deliver it in person. Lila, too, seemed eager to move on, so they pushed on north after spending just one night in the gritty mining town. The road north was crowded, too, in both directions. Families separated by the long occupation were taking advantage of the open border to visit relatives they hadn't seen in decades. Security was still tight at the border crossing between Delphi and the Queendom. The border officer seemed to know Lila, though, and so accepted her companion, Ash Hansen, a farrier from Tamron. Ash kept expecting to see someone he knew, worrying that he might be recognized, but it didn't happen. He guessed he was scarcely recognizable as the bookish, solitary 13-year-old who'd disappeared after his father's murder. As they climbed toward the pass, the air carried the sweet promise that spring would come. At lower altitudes, he saw maiden's kiss and trout lily, buttercups and foam flowers and trillium. The names came back to him readily, as if he'd never been away. Who knew that the memory of flowers went so deep? Whenever they stopped to rest the horses, even Lila picked a few sprigs from the roadside. Who knew that Lila was fond of flowers? At higher altitudes, flowers became scarce, and eventually the trail changed from mud to beaten-down snow. The high pass was a tunnel of weeping ice that would freeze again with nightfall. Now the wind blew down from Hanalea, carrying with it the lonely sound of howling wolves. Goose flesh rose on Ash's neck and arms.
"When the wolves walk, the queendom is in danger."
That's what the clan elders said. The wolves are always walking in this queendom, Ash thought. For once, Lila did more thinking than talking. Just past the top of the pass, she reined in and dismounted, then walked along the trail side as if searching for something.
"What are you looking for?"
Ash looked down at her from atop his pony.
"Here it is."
Lila dropped to her knees beside a half-buried stone marker. Using her gloved hands, she brushed snow away from it, then laid a small bunch of flowers on top.
"What is that?"
"My grandfather died here, defending your mother," Lila said, coming to her feet and scrubbing snow off the knees of her breeches. "Your father found his body."
"That was here?"
After Hanalea's death, the queen had kept her other children close, so Ash had spent little time exploring the borderlands. She nodded.
"I usually stop whenever I come through here. I consider it a monument to foolish self-sacrifice."
Fitting her boot into the stirrup, she remounted her pony.
"Let's go."
As Ash and Lila descended into the vale, the trail widened until it was more of a road. Ash was shocked by how much had changed. Many small farms had been abandoned, their buildings falling into disrepair. Though Grey Wolf banners still flew celebrating the Delphian victory at solstice, some homes stood dark and empty, their windows as opaque as the eyes of the dead.
"Too many houses, not enough people these days," Lila said, following his gaze. "It's hard to work the land with so many off fighting in the summers."
The Durnwater was running high, fed by the melting snow, roaring down out of the mountains on her way to the sea. They crossed the river several times on arched stone bridges, freezing spray needling their faces.
"Lila," Ash said, "could I ask a favor?"
"Depends."
"Just hear me out. When my father was murdered, it was like I turned into a different person. I did some things I'm not proud of."
"Look," Lila said, "if you want absolution, go to a speaker or a priest. I'm hardly in a position to give you advice."
"I'm not asking for advice or absolution," Ash growled. "I'm asking you to keep quiet about my being at Arden's Court, all of that. I'd really like to go back to being Adrian Sulhan, aspiring healer. Just give me this, and I'll owe you."
"You think you can shed your past like a set of scummery small clothes?"
Lila raised an eyebrow.
"If I were you, I'd want to take credit."
"I won't say a word if that's what you want, but you'd better come up with your own story about where you've been all this time."
Dirt turned to brick and cobblestones as they followed the way of the Queens through the market districts of Southbridge and Ragmarket. Ash saw little on offer there, bags of barley mostly, and rice from the shivering fens. Even the pawn shops and second-hand shops had little to display. Most likely everything of value had been sold off long ago. Food was dear, though clan-made goods were less expensive than he remembered, reflecting the law of supply and demand. Ash was no longer the boy who had fled the Vale 4 years ago, driven by grief and guilt. He knew he shouldn't expect to find the city that he remembered on his return. He had changed, and it made sense that the city would, too. His head told him that, but his heart wasn't listening. The Vale he was returning to seemed smaller, shabbier, and sadder, the visible cost of 5 years of brutal war. They stowed their ponies at a livery outside of the castle close. Maybe he should find a place to stay, so he could bathe and get a good night's sleep before he presented himself at court.
"You're just stalling."
The Queen's reaction to his return would have little to do with his appearance or state of hygiene. According to Lila, his mother had known he was alive and at Odin's Ford all along, yet she'd never reached out and tried to persuade him to come home. He'd prefer that Lila wasn't there to see the reunion. He knew she would have something to say, now or later.
"You don't have to come with me right now," Ash said as they approached the castle close. "If you want to get settled, or if you have other things to take care of, you..."
"Oh, I wouldn't miss it," Lila said, rolling her eyes. "If the Queen is in her castle, no doubt my father will be there, too. Besides, I've always wanted to see what it looks like inside."
Ash stopped so quickly that Lila all but ran into him.
"You've never been to the palace?"
"Well, I've been around the palace," Lila said. "I've been in the stable yard and the gatehouse and the army barracks. I've been in quite a few inns and taverns and alleys."
She laughed at his expression.
"Look, it's not like my father wants to meet with his black sheep smuggler spy daughter in the palace or have me call on the Queen. There are too many enemy eyes and ears there. It might have put the Prince of the Realm at risk, and we wouldn't want that."
Ash, momentarily speechless, stared at her. "I left of my own accord," he thought. "But she's been shut out by her own father because of the job she'd been assigned to do, nannying me."
"I'm sorry, Lila," he said simply. "I didn't know."
"No worries," she said. "I only have to see it once. My home is on the coast, with my aunts, uncles, and cousins. Besides, things have changed around here. You won't get through the gates without me."
Lila had a writ from the Queen's Guard that was enough to get them inside the walls of the close, and across the drawbridge into the inner bailey. At the palace gate, they ran into a stone wall in the form of Ruby Greenholt. Ruby was a war orphan who'd been adopted by two of the queen's most trusted wolves, Pearly Greenholt and Talia Abbott. Ruby and Ash had played together as children, since her parents often escorted the royal family when they traveled within the queendom. Ruby was as tall as Ash, but was still totally recognizable with her auburn hair pulled back onto the nape of her neck, her face nearly freckled over from the sun. When he'd left, she'd just been accepted into the elite gray wolves. Now a lieutenant's scarf was knotted around her neck, so she must have done well. He stood there, mutely, hands clenched, heart pounding in his throat, waiting to be recognized. But he wasn't, at least not at first. Ruby was all business.
"I know these are the Queen's public hours, but she's not receiving anyone today," Ruby said. "I don't know whether she'll be granting audiences any time this week."
Looking them up and down, taking in their travel-worn appearance, she softened a bit.
"It looks like you've been a long time on the road. I'm sorry if you've wasted a trip."
Lila hesitated, shooting a look at Ash, as if to see if he wanted to speak up. When he didn't, she said,
"Tell her it's Lila Barrowhill. I think she'll remember my name."
Ruby shook her head.
"Her Majesty said she was not to be disturbed, and so it doesn't matter who you are."
"What about Captain Byrne?"
Lila persisted.
"Is he available? Tell him Lila is here and needs to see him."
She shook her head.
"He's in with the Queen and some others, they're having a meeting," she finished lamely. "If I disturb him, I'll be disturbing the Queen."
"Ruby," Ash said softly, "don't you know me?"
Their eyes met, with Ruby's as hard and blank as an ice field. Then doubt crept into her face, followed by disbelief and a trace of fear.
"By the martyred queens," she whispered. "It can't be. Is it really Adrian?"
"Yes," he said, clearing his throat. "It's me. I am so glad to see you alive and well."
"Me? You're glad to see me alive?"
Ruby's voice was rising. She gripped the front of his coat and fingered the rough fabric, patted him on the cheek with her rough palm.
"Blood and bones! You feel real enough. You're so tall and thin, and that head of hair! Are you risen from the dead in our hour of need, or what?"
Adrian shook his head, his cheeks heaving with embarrassment.
"Not exactly. I am alive, and it's a long story, but right now I would very much like to see my mother."
"Follow me,"
Ruby said, turning and striding off down the hallway, so that Ash had to trot to keep up. As they twisted and turned down the corridors, it was like revisiting the time-blurred setting of a childhood dream, the spaces narrower and smaller and plainer than he remembered. Lila trailed along behind them, shifting her eyes from ceiling to floor, peering down cross corridors.
"It's not as fancy as I thought it would be," she murmured. "I guess I've gotten used to the palace at Arden's Court."
"Really?" Ash thought. "I never got used to that place." When they reached the familiar door that led to the Queen's audience chamber, Ruby pounded on it, and then, as if she couldn't wait for a response, she wrenched it open to be met by a snarling brace of the Queen's gray wolf guards. They quit snarling when they saw it was Ruby, but they didn't step out of the way.
"Greenholt," one of them said. "You heard the morning orders. What the hell are you doing?"
"Just fetch Captain Byrne," Ruby said.
But the captain was already on his way. The commander of the Queen's Guard was leaner and grayer than before, though his eyes were as sharp as they ever were.
I told you we were not to be disturbed, Lieutenant, he growled, for any reason.
Sir, Ruby said, then looked beyond him into the room. Your Majesty, it... Captain Byrne, Lila said, oddly formal to be speaking to her father. We're back. They stared mutely at each other for what seemed like a long time. Then Byrne pulled Lila into a hard embrace.
Sweet Lady of Grace, he whispered. I thought I'd lost you too.
Without waiting for an introduction, Ash stepped around Ruby and fully into the room, where two guards seized hold of him. He spotted his mother immediately, sitting by the fire, a glass of wine cradled between her hands. Like nearly everything else, she looked smaller than he remembered. Her face was drawn and sad, and she was dressed all in a sooty black that absorbed the light. Was it possible she'd never left off mourning colors? He recognized Aunt Melanie, dressed all in black as well, and Micah Bayar looking grim and grave. But then that was his default. And next to him, that must be Cousin Juliana. He took another look around to make sure. No, Liss wasn't there. Hearing the commotion at the door, his mother stood and craned her neck, peering at them.
Hello, Mother,
Ash said, his voice echoing through the suddenly silent hall.
I'm back, and I am so very sorry.
Chapter 19 One-on-One. The blood left his mother's face, as if she were, in fact, seeing a ghost. She lost hold of the glass in her hand, and it fell, scattering shards of glass and droplets of blood-red wine all around her feet. Planting her hands on the arms of her chair, she stood. She took one step toward him, then another, her boots crunching on the glass, her arms outstretched, palms up.
Amelie's blood and bones, she whispered. It can't be. Is it really you?
Her expression mingled hope and dread, as if she didn't dare believe the evidence of her eyes. All around her, the faces of the council members were like spots of suspicion and doubt. Strange. From what Lila had said, his mother and Captain Byrne had known all along that he was alive and hiding out in Odin's Ford. But this reaction was more like she'd actually thought he was dead. Aunt Melanie stood also, her face even paler than usual, pointing a shaking hand at Ash.
It's a trick, Raisa, she said. A despicable Ardenine trick. There's a resemblance, I'll admit, but...
His mother shook her head, raising a hand to hush her sister, her eyes still fixed on his face. He wanted to rush forward, to embrace her, so that she could feel that he was living flesh and blood, but the guards still had hold of him, waiting for some signal from their queen. Anyway, that was her move to make. He couldn't blame her if she ordered him out of the queendom he'd abandoned for so long. All at once, it was as if the wall of doubt came down. His mother leapt forward, closing the distance between them, and flung her arms around him as the two guards hastily released him and stepped back.
"They said you were dead," she murmured, her forehead pressed against his chest. Her entire body was trembling, trembling, and so thin that she seemed fragile, even though he knew she was all muscle and bone.
When I thought I'd lost you too, I was closer to despair than I've ever been.
I'm sorry, Adrian said, over and over. And sometimes, I'm so sorry, wishing he could put more power into the words.
Finally, she took a step back. Coming up on her toes, she put her hands on either side of his face, exploring the bone structure with her fingers.
When did you get so tall and so sad?
I need to explain where I've been and what I've been doing all this time, he said awkwardly.
And you will,
his mother said, pulling him close again.
Right now, I just want to hold on to you.
In the background, he could hear Captain Byrne barking orders. One of them must have been to clear the room, because everyone disappeared except for a handful of wolves, including Ruby. They stayed close, keeping a close eye on Ash until Captain Byrne ushered the two of them into the small reception room attached to the Queen's private suite. Byrne hesitated in the doorway.
It's good to have you home again, Prince Adrian.
Prince Adrian hit Ash's ear wrong. It had been a long time since anyone had called him that. Besides, he'd never really thought of himself as a prince, just the son of a queen and the brother of the heir to the throne. He'd used so many names since he left home that none of them seemed quite right. Byrne turned to the queen.
I'll give the two of you some privacy. Is there anything else you need?
In a way, Adrian dreaded the idea of privacy, terrified as he was of a heart-to-heart. He had no defense to offer, no excuse for what he'd done. And now he was getting ready to lie about it again.
What about Liss?
He said, asking what seemed an obvious question.
She should be here. I need to apologize to her. I made a promise, and I've really let her down.
Liss is at Chalkcliffe's, his mother said, and bit her lip.
She turned back to Byrne. Tell the others that we'll have a small reception after the council meeting tomorrow. Byrne cocked his head.
Will there be a council meeting tomorrow? I thought all meetings were cancelled this week.
That was before I began to believe in miracles again, the Queen said. I'm sure we'll have lots to discuss tomorrow.
After Byrne saluted and left, Ash used Flash to rekindle the fire on the hearth, spending considerably more time on it than the task required.
Is that your father's amulet? She said finally to his back.
Ash swung around to face her, his cheeks burning.
You've probably been wondering what happened to it.
Da gave it to me that day in Ragmarket.
I'll understand if you want it back.
The Queen shook her head.
If he gave it to you, keep it. It suits you.
She motioned to two chairs under the window.
That will do, Adrian. Let's sit.
Ash sat. His mother sat across from him. He had too much to say, and no clue as to how to begin. He'd hoped she might begin spitting out questions, but she just kept looking at him, as if memorizing every new detail. Finally, she breathed deeply and said,
You smell of the road, sweat and horses and leather,
meadow sweet and pine. She put up a hand when he tried to apologize.
No, I like it. My father was a clan trader, and he always came home smelling like faraway places. It reminds me of something your father said once.
She closed her eyes, remembering.
He said, I want to breathe you in for the rest of my life.
Ash swallowed hard, guilt rising in him.
Mother, I...
We are wolves, Adrian. For us, scent is the seat of memory. It is how wolves recognize family, friends, and enemies.
She paused.
I miss the road. Wolves run free. Do you know that I have not been out of the queendom since the war began?
She smiled wistfully.
My children have gone much farther afield.
Right, Ash thought. Your daughter, Hanalea, went into the borderlands and was murdered. Your son went south and became a murderer.
and Liss. Speaking of traveling, what's Liss doing in Chalk Cliffs?
The Chalk Cliffs, he remembered, was little more than a gritty port with a military barracks, bars and cliquet houses, and a stone keep. What business would his sister have in such a place? That question must have shown on his face, because his mother said, "Alyssa has changed since you last saw her, and I'm afraid that she's angry with me right now."
Ash was mystified. Angry? I can understand if she's angry with me, but why would she...
Soon after you disappeared, I found out you were alive, and I didn't tell her.
So you did know, he said. Lila told me that you did.
His mother nodded.
I knew. I decided that after Hanalea's and Han's murders, maybe you were safer there, under an assumed name, than here at court. I didn't tell Alyssa, though.
She fingered the wolf ring that always hung from a chain around her neck.
We'd already had your funeral, and she was just beginning to recover from that. I thought it was too dangerous a secret to tell an 11-year-old. Knowing your sister, she would have insisted on going to Odin's Ford and bringing you back. If agents from Arden had found out where you were, they would have murdered you.
Well, he said, they tried.
As I found out a few days ago, when the team I sent to Odin's Ford to fetch you home returned with the news of the attack on your dormitory and your apparent death. Tears welled up and spilled over once again. I blamed myself.
I'm the one who ran away, Ash said.
It hadn't occurred to him that his mother would hear about the attack, because, for all intents and purposes, he was already dead. He hadn't known that Taliesin had ratted him out.
Why did you decide to bring me home now, after 4 years?
There was an assassination attempt on your sister.
That punch to the gut nearly folded him in two. Wait, what? The bastards went after Liss? They're targeting children now? Is she... What did she...
His mother raised an eyebrow.
She's not a child. She's just 2 years younger than you, and she's grown up fast, she said. That's what happens when you go away. You think time stops at home while you grow and change.
She paused, in case he wanted to argue, but he didn't.
So, she overheard me talking about bringing you home from the academy. She was furious on the one hand, but so very happy that you were alive. She went to Chalk Cliffs to meet your ship when it arrived. And then when Captain de Villieu and the others told her you were dead after all.
Ash sighed.
No wonder she's angry.
Right. You could have been together these past 4 years, but I left you there, unprotected, to be murdered. That's how she sees it. So, when she heard the news, she refused to come back here. She said she was afraid she would say something unforgivable. I've not seen her since I visited her in Delphi, soon after Solstice.
Another unexpected consequence of what he'd done. He'd never considered that it might drive a wedge between his mother and sister.
Will she come home now, do you think?
I think the news that you've survived will bring her home, the Queen said with a wry smile. Especially if you send her a message and ask her to come.
I'd like to go to Chalk Cliffs and bring her home myself, Ash said.
No!
She said it with such force that he flinched back.
I'm sorry, she said, but you've just come back, and I'll not have you leaving again right away. I've come to feel like each time I say goodbye to my children, it may be the last time I see them.
Right, he said, chastened.
How do you want to handle it, then?
Here's what we'll do. The weather has been so bad that we've received no communication from Chalk Cliffs in weeks. I think that's easing now. General Dunedain's in Delphi right now, getting ready for the spring campaign. We'll ask her to send a salvo to Chalk Cliffs to relieve Lys and send her back to Delphi. We'll meet her there.
To relieve Lys? Relieve her of what?
Ash felt like he'd walked into the third act of a play. His mother rose, crossed the fireplace, and brought back a framed portrait. This was done at solstice. She handed it to him. His mother was right. Lys was no longer a child. What had seemed like scrappiness in childhood had become confidence and resolve. She was all golds and coppers, deep golden hair, coppery skin, steady brown eyes. Her chin was tilted up a bit, as if to say, "Try me." Most surprising of all, she was wearing a spattercloth uniform with an officer's scarf. Ash looked up at the queen.
"Lys is wearing a uniform. Does that mean she's in the army?"
His mother nodded. "She's a captain in the Highlanders now, and she has made quite a reputation for herself."
"But what happened to music and drawing and stories? She has so much talent and..."
"I believe she's decided that those skills are not well suited for the world she lives in. But happily, she seems to excel at warfare, too. They call her the Grey Wolf in the field." Jenna's words came back to him.
"I will try to think of you as a wolf called Adam."
She'd seen the wolf in him, too.
"Is that what war does? It turns us into wolves. Or does the wolf have to be there to begin with?"
"Adrian?" His mother touched his arm, and he realized he'd gone silent for too long.
"I'm sorry. I just hope that she'll return to the arts someday."
"I do, too. I hope the time will come when we don't need her martial talents so much anymore. We've had so many losses. Most of us have had to develop new skills. Your cousin Juliana, for instance, she's directing the intelligence service now."
"Juliana?" Ash shook his head. "I never would have predicted that."
"She's very different from Melanie, very different," she repeated for emphasis. "That's becoming clearer every day." That had raised another question, one that Ash was afraid to ask.
"If Juliana is heading up the intelligence service, then what about Cat Tyburn? What's she doing?"
"She's dead. Murdered. Nearly 3 years ago now."
"Cat too?"
Ash took in that news like a punch to the gut.
"I can't imagine anyone taking her by surprise."
"None of us can. No one is safe, apparently."
"So maybe Lys is safer in the army than here in the city. At least there you know you have a fight on your hands."
"Maybe. Anyway, it's part of her role as a wartime queen." Ash handed the painting of his sister back.
"I can understand why soldiers are willing to follow her. She looks formidable."
"She is. It's not easy to get her to sit for a portrait. I tried to persuade her to wear a gown suitable for her name day, but she said she'd rather look like herself.
I think she wants to put any possible suitors on notice."
"Suitors?" Ash said, feeling pummeled.
"Isn't she a little young to be thinking about that?"
His mother smiled at his expression. "Her name day is this June, and that's when that kind of talk begins. Not by her choice. She's about as eager to get married as I was at that age."
"That's just a few months away."
It wasn't easy to get his mind around that. It was as if he was going to lose his sister all over again.
It doesn't mean that she'll be getting married any time soon. Though I wasn't that much older than she when I married your father. She sighed and twisted her wedding ring. I'm glad now that I married young, so that Han and I had more time together. It was 25 years, but it just flew by. She stood, extending her hand. Speaking of your father, let's go see him. Chapter 20. In the City of the Dead. His mother led the way through narrow passageways and up back staircases, taking routes he'd probably once known but had since forgotten. Felsmarch Castle was a labyrinth of hidden ways, some of them built by his many greats' grandfather, Alger Waterlow, and many added since. Growing up, Ash and his friends, including Finn Sulmander, Ty Griffin, and Ruby Greenhold, had burrowed into all the dark places, seeking routes that would enable them to go wherever they wanted, while avoiding parents and schoolmasters and nurses. His mother had always had the uncanny ability to find him when she really wanted to. "Don't fool yourself, Adrian. Though I don't pretend to know all the secrets of this palace, there is no one living who knows them better than me." Eventually, Ash and his mother crossed the bridge into the cathedral temple. Ash had spent hours in the libraries there, studying old histories and books about healing plants and poisons and magic. He'd spent less time in the sanctuary, preferring the small temple in his mother's garden, or Southbridge Temple, which seemed cozier to a small boy. The Grey Wolf Queens were not buried here. Their ashes were interred on the flank of a mountain that would forever after carry their names. Wolves run free. But the cathedral was the final resting place for generations of royal relations, temple speakers, court officials, and friends of the line. Most high wizards preferred to be buried with their own kind on Grey Lady, where the wizard council met, and many wizards had estates. But some had chosen to be buried here at the cathedral, close to the center of power. The crypt was reserved for the most important of the dead, royal princes and princesses, consorts, and those bound captains who did not choose to be buried with their queens. At first, Ash thought the sanctuary was unchanged from the last time he'd seen it, at his sister Hanalea's funeral. But now he saw that there was a new side chapel, flooded with light from an adjacent courtyard. Instead of leading him down the stairs into the crypt, his mother led him into the light. Like most older temples, this chapel had apertures oriented to admit the rising and setting sun. Other than that, it was more of a library with shelves lined with books about botanicals and horticulture. A plaque on the wall was inscribed, "Alistair Reading Room." "This began as your father's project," his mother said. "It was going to be a surprise for me, to honor your sister Hanalea. Hannah didn't live long enough to be crowned, so she wasn't buried in the spirits like the rest of us. Han didn't want to send her to the crypt. He couldn't imagine that a young woman would want to go down there with all the old people. Plus, she wouldn't want to hear speakers droning on every day. As you know, some are better than others. I wanted her close, though. I wanted to be able to come see her whenever I wished. So he created a churchyard." She threw open a set of wrought-iron doors in a design featuring the Waterlow ravens, the royal wolves, Hanalea's winged torch, and the briar rose. The courtyard reminded Ash of a churchyard in a small mountain town, or a private family cemetery on an estate. Trees had been planted, but they were still small, though the courtyard would be shaded for a good part of the day by the surrounding temple. It was slightly overgrown with meadow grass, as a country churchyard should be. Their family plot contained 3 stones,
The largest was for Princess Hanalea, as befitted her status. Hanalea Anaresa, Princess Heir, 34th in the new line of Grey Wolf Queens, named Running Wolf in the Uplands, killed in the Borderlands with her bound captain, Simon Byrne. Wolves run free. On the other side of Hannah's plot, his father's stone. Hansen Alistair, Khan Sul Alger, High Wizard, consort to Queen Raisa Anna Mariana, 33rd in the new line of Grey Wolf Queens, named Hunts Alone in the Uplands. You don't get what you don't go after. The third stone was his own. Adrian Sul Han, Ash, Prince of the Realms, Wizard and Healer, son of Queen Raisa Anna Mariana and Han Sul Alger, consort, Street Lord of the Borderlands, between life and death. It was more than peculiar, standing here, reading his own gravestone inscription, feeling unworthy of it.
You really went to a lot of trouble, he said, embarrassed. You could have just built a cairn or something, especially once you knew I was really alive.
Your sister insisted. At first she wanted nothing to do with holding a funeral for you. She never lost hope that you were still alive. When we went ahead anyway, she refused to attend. Finally, I was able to persuade her to take charge of your epitaph. That's what she chose.
Ash was beginning to realize what a force his sister had become. She occupied space, even when she wasn't here. His mother knelt and began pulling out some weeds that had crept into one of the flower beds around the plot.
Remember when we used to work in the garden together? She said.
Ash stared down at the flower bed. The flowers were familiar, foxflowers and trueheart, and maiden's kiss, red, white, and blue, the same as the ones his father had bought his mother on the day he died.
Those flowers, he said hoarsely, pointing. That was...
I know, the queen said without looking up.
Your father knew these were my favorite flowers. They still are.
I refuse to let an assassin take that enjoyment away from me. Ash knelt beside his mother, awash in memories from when they gardened together when he was a boy. At the time, he'd mainly noticed her many absences, their many differences. Now, he remembered how much they'd shared. He cleared his throat.
Speaking of Da, I have a message for you from him.
This time she looked up at him.
A message?
He took his mother's hands and looked into her eyes. It was a job to force the words out, though they were engraved on his soul.
Something he said to me that day in Ragmarket, when he knew he was dying. He said to tell you that having you, that being with you, that loving you, it was worth it.
He swallowed hard, then repeated it softly.
He said, it was worth it.
His father's amulet buzzed against Ash's skin, startling him. It was as if it were underlining the message, or reacting to it. But he kept his focus on his mother's face. She sat for a long moment, eyes closed, until tears leaked out from under her lashes. She swallowed hard, and then said in a husky voice,
I might have to add that to both our stones.
So it was worth it for you?
How can you ask that question? She said. Falling in love in wartime is chancy, just like having children. We've had a lot of pain,
but a lot of joy all the same. Of course it's been worth it for me, too. How much time does it take? Ash blurted. His mother frowned, as if puzzled. She let go of his hands and sat back on her heels. How much time does it take for what? How much time does it take to stop feeling guilty for surviving? How much time do you have together to make it worth the pain of saying goodbye?
There's not a rule for that, she said, searching his face. You've met someone, haven't you? It was a statement, not really a question. He nodded.
I met a girl, he said.
Is she a student at the Ford?
Memories rushed in at him from all sides. The acrid scent of the torches, the dance of the light on the walls of the dungeon, Jenna in her filthy finery, saying,
For a healer, you have a very dark soul.
He shook his head.
It's a long story. One maybe I'll tell later. Once I figure out what to say. Anyway, her name was Jenna. We weren't even together that long, so I don't know whether to call it love.
He looked up at her.
How do you even know?
Love is not measured by the amount of time you spend together, his mother said. It's how that time is spent.
She smiled wryly. Love moves fast in wartime. It has to. And it's not particularly useful to try to put a label on it.
It doesn't matter anyway, he said. She's dead.
Dead? His mother sighed and squeezed his shoulder. I'm so sorry, sweetling.
An hour with his mother, and he was already handing off sorrows. It wasn't fair.
I feel stupid bringing this up, he said. There's no comparison with what you had with Da, with what you lost. And yet, does it ever get easier? Do you ever wake up and it doesn't run you over when you remember?
She frowned, thinking. Ash liked that she didn't answer right away with a platitude or dismiss his pain as trivial.
It does get easier, she said finally. There will come a time when your memories will bring you more joy than pain. It's taken me 4 years to get to that point.
I see.
He took a quick breath.
I know I have no right to ask this, but...
But have I thought of remarrying?
She snorted.
Everyone else asks it, so why shouldn't you?
The answer is yes, of course I've thought of it. But that's as far as it goes. I see no reason to marry right now. Sometimes it seems that I would only be putting one more person at risk.
What do you mean?
Our family has suffered more than our share of loss, and yet the losses keep coming. The wolves keep running. The queens of the Grey Wolf line saw wolves in times of danger and change.
Are you seeing wolves now, still?
The wolves are always with me these days,
his mother said, gripping the wolf ring that hung from a chain around her neck.
I can't help wondering if we are reaching the end of the Grey Wolf line.
Ash had never heard his mother sound so despondent. But then, so much had happened these past 4 years that he hadn't been around to see.
No!
He practically shouted, and then more quietly,
Mother, I can't believe that this is all for nothing. I can't believe that we live in a world that rewards evil and punishes the good.
Some speakers say that we must wait to be rewarded in the next life.
She shook her head. Forgive me for being maudlin. We should be celebrating your return from the dead, and looking forward to your reunion with Alyssa.
Clearly, that was all she meant to say on the topic, because she stood and said briskly, "Enough.